It is going to be a Wiley Wednesday edition of Let's Talk right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. You have found your home for entertainment for the next 2 hours. Congratulations. We're Wiley.
Wiley.
We're feeling very Wiley.
I'm thinking
this
Wisely
morning.
Or something. Wiley.
Okay. Well, we could be wise.
Wisely.
I mean, in theory. Phone line is open and available for your use at 814-954-7266. 814-954-7266 will get you into the big show on this very morning.
Wisely Wednesday. Sometimes we're accused of being wise. It's just an accusation.
Huh.
So not a big deal.
Has right. not happened very often to me.
Well, okay. Speak for yourself.
I'm
Come on.
Just
Ouch.
Saying.
All right, we got a busy show. Coming up at 9 o'clock, our guest is going to be Dr. Kyle Kopko, who is the director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. That's pretty much where we're sitting. We've had Dr. Kopko on before, but it was over a year ago. And we were talking about, you know, what are the prospects for here and, you know, central PA, the northern tier, all that area. And a year ago, it was like, not great. So we want to get an update from Dr. Kopko about, you know, what's the state of things right now. There are things happening. There are things moving. So we're going to talk about some of those things. Obviously, new leadership in Washington. What does that mean? Does that have any effect at all as far as trying to sort of revitalize rural Pennsylvania? Well, we're going to hear from Dr. Kopko coming up at 9 o'clock, so we're looking forward to that. Now, some of you are signed up for our 98.7 The Fox Insider Newsletter.
Ooh.
And if you are and you've checked your email this morning, there's a little gift in there for you.
Hey, hey, hey!
It's the latest edition of the 98.7 The Fox Insider Newsletter.
Lucky you, ducks.
You lucky duck, chicken, bird, you know, fowl, geese, whatever you want to be. So hopefully you, you know, check that out.
That was quite wily of us.
Interesting insight from the Ironhead about the Big Ten wrestling tournament.
Oh, yeah?
Including something you saw that when I read it, I'm the guy that puts this thing together.
It was a little...
When I read it, I'm like, are you kidding?
Yeah, that's what we
Where did that come
were wondering.
How did that happen? You know, it's like...
It was a little bizarre.
It's like, where are you? Chicago or Chicago suburbs?
Yeah, suburbs. And yeah, just walking right across the street and
surprise.
Into the parking lot. It's like, oh, now, hello. Now thankfully, we're in our vehicle.
Don't give any more details.
No, I will not.
That is a newsletter exclusive. Like, what are they talking about? Also, we have our
finally found Bigfoot. I can say no more.
In Chicago. Bigfoot in Chicago.
It was very unexpected.
That'd be Michael Jordan. What size shoe did Michael Jordan wear? Do you know? I have no idea.
17 and a half.
Really?
I have no idea.
I have no clue either. Maybe that would
sounded convincing, Bigfoot, though, didn't it?
I don't know. Dennis Rodman, what was his shoe size? I have no
he
idea.
He was an 18.
Okay. So, also, we have our featured sponsor of this edition and the very special from our featured sponsor that only our newsletter readers will get.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah, what's the thing?
So, I know we have listeners. You're like, oh, yeah, shoot, I wanted to sign up for
Hello,
that.
Hello, listeners.
Oh, I forgot to sign up for that. Here's what you do. Go to our website, 987thefox.info. 987thefox.info. Scroll to the bottom. Literally, scroll to the bottom of any page on the website.
Do it. Do it.
All right.
Do
and
it.
There's an area there about our newsletter. All you got to do is just put your email address in there. We don't ask for anything else.
Well, Social Security number, bank account number. Huh?
Actually, we don't ask
We
for
ended
that.
Up not...
We decided not
son of
to...
Son a gun. All right. I missed the last meeting.
Include that.
All right.
Okay. Yes, you did miss the last
yeah,
meeting.
Yeah, sorry that about that. I was very busy.
For goodness sakes.
Yeah.
We'll take very good care of your email address. It's only going to be used for this. All right. Nothing else. None of those shenanigans. So I tell you what we'll do. I've got a note on my calendar. If we get some more folks to sign up today and tomorrow, I'm going to resend out this week's edition on Friday. All right? But you've got to sign up today or tomorrow to make it for Friday, and then you're in. Then you're part of the list, okay? So, again, very simple. I mean, you could do this on your phone. 987thefox.info. Scroll to the bottom. Find that area there. Put your email address in. Hit submit or whatever the button says. And you're good. All right. So making a note, we will resend that on Friday, and you could maybe take advantage of the special advertiser special.
Up to you.
And other stuff. All right. So there we go. Lots of stuff.
Gonna miss out or not?
All right. Some quick notes here. I've not noticed this until this morning. So I'm you know, driving into the studio. For some reason, a lot of traffic this morning, which I find curious, since state college schools, of course, are closed. Spring break. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Give us a break.
So it's not, you know, buses in the other districts are running, but not state college. So somehow I got in a line of traffic, and this person driving in front of me, I was able to get close enough to their vehicle, you know, behind them, to see their license plate. Some people are very creative with their license plates, aren't they? And so I saw this person's license plate, and I'm like, really?
Oh,
so the person kind of gets out in front of me, like, okay, I got to get closer. So I get, you know, I speed up a little bit, and I get a little closer. Then there was a stoplight. And sure enough, maybe if this is you, I don't know, congratulations, license plate was stupid one.
Huh.
And I'm thinking, really? Yes, stupid, and the number one, stupid one. Now, I don't know who this person is, obviously. Maybe their whole family has cars, and it's stupid one, stupid two, stupid three. I'm going to guess their last name is not stupid.
Well,
I'm just going to
that would be unfortunate.
I'm going to take a wild guess on that one. That's not their last name, okay? Or is it just stupid one?
Now you got me thinking. Is there somebody out there with the last name stupid? And how unfortunate that would be.
Joe Stupid. Now, we're not making, if that's your last name, we're not making fun.
No, but I feel for you.
Kinda. No, I think this.
I mean, can you imagine the coach?
Stupid one.
Great play, stupid! Stupid! Get in there! I mean,
I'm going to guess, no, that's not a name, all right? Now, that's an interesting choice.
It should be.
It's an interesting choice for a license plate. Like, why would you choose this? Why would you put that on your license plate?
Oh, I know.
What? What?
Because they're stupid?
No.
Oh, I thought that was the answer. No.
Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it just seemed like
a... I don't know. It's like, why would somebody put that on their license plate? Now, if that's you...
call us up, stupid.
814-954-7266. Call in and just kind of, you don't have to give your name or anything. Just enlighten us, like, why did you do that? All right. Why is that your license plate? Is there a stupid one, stupid two, stupid three? Or is the license plate just supposed to be stupid one? As in just you. Inquiring minds want to know.
Uh-huh.
Why would you put that on your license plate?
That does now, seem like a curious choice.
Now, my car, I'm plain Jane. You know, whatever the Department of Transportation gives me, there's my license plate. Yeah, just a standard license plate. What do you, I've never even looked. What do you have in your vehicle? Just a standard license plate, or is it Ironhead 1 or something, or whatever?
Mine is awesome, fabulous, fantastic, Ironhead, the man.
No.
Oh, no. It might just be like LVM.
That's too many letters. All right. Yeah. That doesn't work.
I tried.
Now, again, some people get really creative. Like, they do funky spelling on their license plate. Now, you pay extra for that, of course. What's that called? A vanity license plate? It's got a fancy name. You pay extra to have your vanity license plate. And I think you know that you can't just put anything on your license plate. All right. Somebody down in Harrisburg kind of looks over this stuff. So, in other words, you can't put the F word on your license plate. They're gonna shoot that one down. Sorry.
And here I was gonna have fun Ironhead, but they don't let you
well,
put the
okay, that's not
the
what
F
I was
word
thinking.
Fun.
But anyway,
huh? There's another F.
So somebody down there is a judge of license plates. You can't have anything you want. All right. And of course, if somebody else has whatever you wrote down, well, then that's out. You have to go find another one. But it's interesting what some people put on license plates. And if you're out and about, you're driving around, every now and then you encounter one of these, like, what does that mean? Or, hey, that's kind of interesting. Or then I see stupid one. It's like, well, I could not believe it this morning. I had to get close again. Like, did I really see that? By the way, stupid one's car needs a car wash.
Well, don't.
All right, it's a little dirty.
Don't a lot of
it. It was
this.
A little hard to read. I had to get really close. And, of course, coming in, it was still kind of darkish, you know, outside and so on. And I'm like, did I really see that? Yes, I did. Stupid one. So there you go. I don't know. This is not related, but we were so busy with the Beaver Stadium field topic yesterday.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a follow-up on that today.
Really? Okay. Yeah. We'll hold that thought. Sports coming up a little later on. Yesterday, if you follow the news at all, you know this. Yesterday was the five-year anniversary of the start of the pandemic. All right? The World Health Organization, 5 years ago yesterday, officially said, uh-oh, we got a problem. All right? This is a pandemic now. You governments, do what you need to do. And that's when we all started going crazy. All right?
Yes.
Thrown home and all that crazy stuff. And, of course, there were a number of stories, you know, yesterday, actually the last couple of days, you know, about, you know, what have we learned from the last 5 years? All right, you can think about that for yourself. Trib Live is a media outlet from the Pittsburgh area. And I came across a story of theirs from, I guess, a couple of days ago. And they had a quote from Tom Wolf. Remember him?
I remember him.
The former governor, Tom Wolf, former governor of Pennsylvania, who, of course, was right in the middle of this gig 5 years ago because he was the governor. He had to make decisions and all that sort of stuff. And if you can recall 5 years ago, remember, he was on television like every day along with the health secretary. And they pretty much said the same thing every day. Remember that? It was pretty much wash your hands, cover your mouth, or whatever. Not wear a mask, not early on. All right? It was all wash your hands, keep your distance. You remember all that stuff? And then the health secretary would come on. It was the same gig. It was the same info every day, except the numbers were different. Oh, let's go through the numbers. It was like a Wall Street report. Let's go through the numbers. How many people are in a hospital now? God forbid, how many people passed away? You know, just, ugh, stuff. And it didn't take me very long to think, okay, could you give us something original? Maybe not do this every day. Maybe do it every 2 days. Maybe do it every 3 days. Maybe do it once a week. It was, all right, one man's opinion. It was overkill. It was just simple overkill. And so for a while, Wolf was on every day. Then after a while, he wasn't on that much. Then it was just the health secretary. Okay, here's today's report. I'm not snoring or sleeping. It's just
like
it's the same as the last X number of days. The numbers are different. It's like, why are you doing this? So there was a quote from Wolf in this story from Trib Live. And I read the quote, and I just thought, Yeah. All right. Hindsight is 20/20, that old line. So the quote here was, this is from Governor Wolf. One of the problems was there were no right answers. If you did something to help yourself here, you were hurting yourself over there. What happened, happened, and what we did. But, this is the interesting part.
that was great analysis, but, though. I will...
the end of the quote was
at least accurate,
but I'll be second guessing myself for the rest of my life.
Oh, me too. Well, look at that. The former governor and I have something in common.
All right, so the governor gets points for being honest.
Yeah.
Because
now he gets points for being honest.
All right, let's defend the governor. I mean, what happened 5 years ago has never happened before. And nobody had any idea how to handle it. There was no rule book. There was no guidebook. There was nothing. It was just like, we got to do what? Everybody's going to do what? You know, all that stuff. And so you had to scramble. There was no script. There was no nothing. This has never happened before. Well, what do we do? Well, okay. And they came up with what they came up with. Those daily, almost frustrating updates on television.
Not almost.
I think it was like 12:30 every day. If you remember those from 5 years ago. I think it was like 12:30 every day. Okay, it's time for these people again. Let's run the numbers. Again, it was like Wall Street. Let's run the numbers. Like they do with Wall Street every day. He'll be second-guessing himself for the rest of his life. Now, I wish in the story they would have kind of kept going like, okay, Governor, what would you have done differently? That wasn't in the story. All right. There's just a quote from the governor and then some other things. So it would have been interesting to talk to the governor. Okay, Governor, it's 5 years later now. Thankfully, this thing's in the rearview mirror now. Hopefully never, ever, ever, ever to come back. What would you have, hindsight, what would you have done differently? I would be curious for his answer.
Yeah.
Now, he might not give an answer. He might think, well, I'm not going to step into this one. So I'm just saying, yeah, maybe we should have done some things differently. Key word there is the word maybe. Who knows? But it's just interesting. New York Times had a story about, 5 years later, what have we learned? Let me see. Do I have that here? I did have it here. I lost it. Where did it go? Hold on. Here it is. Boom. All right. 5 years later, what would they do differently? No, actually, that's the Tom Wolf story. I'm sorry. That's not the one I want. Maybe I don't have that story. Shame on me. Thing about, obviously, the whole thing about closing schools. Schools closed. And remember, it wasn't just 5 years ago, 2020. For a lot of places, that continued into the next school year, 2020, 2021. I'm thinking Altoona. Altoona schools, because I was doing some work down there at that time. Altoona schools, they were closed until March of 2021. So down there in Altoona, at least, schools were closed for a full calendar year, 12 months. And what I remember, ironically, is Altoona didn't build a new high school. They built a new section to their high school down there. And so when the 2020-2021 school year started, their brand new school, there it was. It was ready to go. Let's go. Nothing for at least 6 months. Nobody was in the building for 6 months because of this. So all the things with schools, should we have done some things differently? All right. Have you seen test scores? Have you seen all these stories? Kids still haven't caught up. It's been 5 years. All right, so when it came to handling schools, did they botch it? And, of course, if you remember the statistics, this was primarily, COVID was a terrible thing. Older people, people with health conditions, okay, they were the ones most at risk, not children, not kids, that they should have gone back to school. And a lot of schools did go back to school, like in the fall, all right, most. All right, I'm blanking. State College, did they go back to school in September of 2020? I know Penns Valley did, where I live, and most other schools. I did a lot of work with schools back then. Most other schools did. They went back to school. Altoona was sort of the outlier. They didn't go back for months, many months. I kind of think State College didn't go back for many months.
It had options. He could go in person or virtual, and, there was a lot of...
And we learned that virtual learning is interesting, but not the be-all, end-all, not even close.
No.
So, again, we look back at this stuff. It's interesting to look back at this stuff. And, yes, it's easy to second-guess. It's simple to second-guess. But just that quote there from Governor Wolf, I just found it interesting. I thought it was, you know, he'll be second guessing himself for the rest of his life. All right, you get to 5 points for honesty. All right, before we take a break, how about some good news? All right. This is according to Newsweek. They have a story this morning: egg prices plummet.
What?
Hey, according to this story, that's what they claim. All right, I'm reading here. Figures released by the U.S. Department of Agriculture shows that the average cost of a dozen eggs now cheaper than in recent days. According to this, now this is like a national average, okay?
Okay.
A dozen eggs yesterday was apparently, let's see, $5.51 nationally. According to this, the high was actually, let's see, the all-time high was $8.17, and apparently that was earlier this month, March. It's now, allegedly, it's now down to $5.51. So that is less than $2 cheaper. Now, I haven't been to a grocery store in a few days, okay? I did buy a dozen eggs, I don't know, a week or two ago, and it was $8 for a dozen eggs. Yikes.
Ridiculous.
Okay. I guess I'm going to have to, just for fun almost, because I don't need the eggs right now, but go to a grocery store like today or tomorrow or Friday and see what the price of a dozen eggs is. Is it still $8? This says a $2 drop, so is it down to $6? And hopefully it's going to keep going down to like $4, and it'll go down to $2, whereas where it's supposed to be, for goodness sakes. All right, come on, $8. Is this going to continue? We'll have to see. Again, this is about this avian flu, and every time one bird in a flock gets avian flu, you take them all out, which is just, a stupid one. That's a dumb strategy. There's got to be a better strategy than that. There just has to be. And so maybe the new people in charge of the Department of Agriculture, they've laid out a plan. I can't believe the plan is working that well that fast. I hope it is. I find that hard to believe. But a $2 drop in the price of eggs in the span of like a week or two? That's very interesting. So, I don't know. Go to your favorite supermarket, wherever you buy eggs. See if the prices come down. Again, the place I normally go to, it was $8 a week or two ago. What is it now? And if it's coming down, we can all applaud. Yay! And then hope it doesn't, you know, crop up again. Okay, let's take our break. We got sports stuff. We have interesting, maybe education stuff. We have our guest at 9 o'clock. And we're still on the search for Stupid One. All right, if you know who that is. Right now, we're going to take a break.
Would you like to profit from Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox? If you have sales experience, we're looking for new team members to spread the word to local businesses about 98.7 The Fox. Sell advertising with a lot of potential from all of our Fox programs, Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, and live sports events focused right here in Center County. For more information, contact manager Sam Jordan via email at foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. That's foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. Join us here at 98.7 The Fox.
Like Cummings Supply Incorporated, located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, is looking to hire numerous carpenters, laborers, and operators starting immediately for the construction season. Like Cummings Supply is a reputable contractor that has been in business since 1948 and is family-owned. Like Cummings Supply specializes in building bridges, box culverts, and also performs demolition work throughout the mid-state region. Having a CDL is preferred but not necessary. Stop by their office located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport and fill out an application and have two forms of ID ready. Lycoming Supply is an EEO employer. You may mail a resume or visit their office at Lycoming Supply, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. for more information. Lycoming Supply Incorporated, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 today.
The Center Hall Farm Store is proud to serve our community as a small family business that provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm Store makes its own horse, cow, pig, chicken, and bird feeds and has a great variety of pet feeds for your needs. Open weekdays from 8 to 4 and Saturday from 8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or on the web at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCutcheon has won it! They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him, and he's done it again. Paul Skeens finishes strong.
Every game, all season long, brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion.
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
It is a pretty darn nice Wednesday morning we have in play.
It won't be as warm as yesterday.
Well, that's all right. I can live with that.
55 I'll take, though.
I can live with that. We'll have some open phone time here coming up in the third segment of this hour. But this is the time of the day where we take a check of the sports scene. And, well, there's quite a bit actually going on. Penn State baseball rallied with two runs in the seventh inning and then put up four more in the eighth. But the Nittany Lions fall short at Georgetown yesterday, 14-10. The final, the Hoyas pull out the victory. Joe Jackonski, Bryce Molinaro, and Ryan Weingartner all homered for Penn State. Nittany Lions, though, falling to 11-3 on the season. The two teams will meet again today at Georgetown in a 4 o'clock start. Penn State will then visit Northwestern for a three-game series in the Big Ten. Starting on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Weather shortened the Penn State women's golf team's trip to the Briar Creek Invitational. Just 36 holes were played. The Nittany Lions shot a 35 over and finished tied for 14th in the 17-team field. The fifth-ranked Penn State men's lacrosse team will wrap up its non-conference schedule today against Robert Morris. Penn State will be back at Panzer Stadium and will be having a home game for the first time since February 22nd. The game will get underway at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Penn State is 5-1 on the season, now ranked fourth in the country in the coaches' poll. Robert Morris comes in at 3-3. Penn State's Hunter Aquino and Alex Ross tabbed as weekly award winners by the Big Ten. Aquino named the Big Ten Freshman of the Week for the second straight week and the third time this season. Ross was named the Defensive Player of the Week for the second time in his career. For the second straight season, Penn State's Ace Baldwin is the Big Ten Men's Basketball Defensive Player of the Year. Baldwin also named All-Big Ten Honorable Mention, along with Yannick Conan Niederhauser. Puff Johnson was named Penn State's Sportsmanship Award winner. Penn State women's gymnastics star Elizabeth Leary recognized as the Big Ten Women's Gymnast Freshman of the Week for her performance this past Sunday. Leary earning the conference's weekly honor thanks to her career best 39.325 in the all-around at George Washington. It included a 9.8 or better score on all four events. The Raleigh, North Carolina native earning a career best 9.85 on both the balance beam and the floor exercise. For the first time since the 2023 season and just the second time since 2020, Penn State Men's Gymnastics has a finalist for the Neeson-Emery Award. That is basically the Heisman Trophy for men's gymnastics, and senior Josh Carnes has been named as one of seven finalists for the honor. That announced by College Gymnastics Association yesterday. Carnes, a Erie, Pennsylvania native, finished the 2024 season with a bronze medal at the NCAA Championships on the parallel bars after securing the event title in the Big Ten Championships. Senior is a five-time All-American, earning the nod in the all-around and parallel bars in both 2023 and 2024. Some sad news yesterday out of Pittsburgh. Former Steelers lineman and broadcaster Craig Wolfley has died at the age of 66. Wolfley played guard for Pittsburgh for 10 seasons and became a beloved radio and TV broadcaster. Just he had a lot of fun, and it made it fun to listen to, and he will be sorely missed as part of that Steelers broadcast team. For the second time in school history, the St. Francis men's basketball team is headed to the NCAA tournament. Red Flash beating Central Connecticut 46-43 to win the Northeast Conference tournament last night. Of course, St. Francis is coached by State High alum Rob Krimmel. Congratulations the Red Flash. Very cool story. The Red Hot Pittsburgh Penguins. You can't stop them. They beat the Vegas Golden Knights 3-2 in overtime last night. If you're counting, that's not one, but two games in a row that they've won.
Against the Golden Knights. Both of them, right?
Yeah. No. Winnipeg. Not Winnipeg. Not the Golden Knights. They lost to the Golden Knights. Then they won on Sunday, right?
I thought they played Vegas twice.
I thought there was somebody in between. I'm so
stunned that they won 2-0
Can't
keep track.
No, it was. it wasn't the Wild. They beat the Wild
Sunday. Minnesota.
Yes. Right. They had lost to the Golden Knights because I had gotten. That was not a good game.
Minnesota and Vegas are so similar.
Everybody is constantly mixing them up. That is fair. Philadelphia Flyers did lose last night 5-2 to the Ottawa Senators. Folks, it is now becoming readily apparent that the Pittsburgh Pirates are World Series bound. We'll have all of the action for you all season long right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. All they have to do is pitch Paul Skeens in every game, and they are World Series bound. And, you know, have him hold up. Skeens looked terrific yesterday. Pirates beat the Yankees 9-1. The Yankees lose 9-1. Your final there. The Philadelphia Phillies, well, they had the bats going yesterday in Fort Myers, an 18-8 win over the Boston Red Sox. Pittsburgh Steelers signing running back Kenneth Gainwell to a 1-year contract. Okay. Thanks for that. We could get news as early as today as to whether or not one Aaron Rodgers is siding with the Steelers. I'm reading more and more reports, though, that it's like the Steelers are not going to give
what he wants.
If they do, they have, like, no money on the cap front to do anything else at this point. And again, on the Goon and Ironhead show yesterday, we talked about it a little bit. Just again, say it out loud a couple times to yourself. One locker room, George Pickens, Aaron Rodgers,
and
our buddy DK.
Metcalf.
Are you, like,
it's going to be wild.
You think that's going to just work out swimmingly all season, do you? So just keep an eye. But again, could be as early as today, one way or another, that we get news regarding one Aaron Rodgers.
Okay. Yay.
Would love to see his ability in Pittsburgh. But
not his asking price.
That is, it does not seem like it would be a great fit, but we will see.
And it would be a short-term fix anyway.
Well, for sure.
Anyway. And so the question
is, this is not your quarterback of the future.
Is that what you want? A short-term fix. All right. You're a Jackson Dart fan.
I am a Jackson Dart fan.
I saw
apparently, there's not a lot of my fellow Steelers fans who join me in that, but I am. I really
like
it. I
tell you what,
there's
a few. I mean, I caught something on social media again yesterday. It's a clip of Dart making a great play. And like Steelers, Jackson Dart, you know, here he is. Of course, in the draft, you have to kind of hold your breath and see if you can actually get him because it's a draft. But at least some people think. Now, he would be the long-term project. Of course, wasn't Kenny Pickett the long-term project?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't he?
Yep.
All right,
now he's going to lead the Cleveland Browns to mediocrity.
Be a long-term project. Uh-huh. So there we go. All right, let's see. A couple quick things. Yes, congratulations to Ace Baldwin once again. Defensive player of the year, but again on social media, again, I'm a Twitter X guy. Some unhappy people yesterday who thought that Baldwin is not deserving of the award this year. All right, that they're, first off, he's playing for a team that the Big Ten tournament starts today and his team isn't even playing. So you chose him as your defensive player of the year and they couldn't even make the tournament? And they're throwing out some other statistics and mentioning guys from other teams and stuff like that. I have to admit that, well, I mean, last year, Ace, absolutely, yes. Defensive player of the year, yes. Excuse me. This year, remember he had an injury and that slowed him up. And yet they make the announcement yesterday. I'm like, oh, surprise, surprise. Okay. Big Ten tournament does start today. Is anybody actually going to watch? You going to watch?
I will probably not. Got some other things on the agenda.
If
today.
I'm bored, I might tune it in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not rolling it out this evening maybe. But
it's like when your favorite team isn't in this gig, who cares?
Yeah, I'll look at the results.
And we'll
probably watch on the weekend, but
do a tape recording or on my I do streaming at my house, and not for every sports game, but for a lot of sports games, you can kind of choose the game. In other words, it's recorded. You can choose the game, and a screen comes up and it says, "Do you want to watch key plays?" I might just go for the key plays.
There you go.
Just like, okay, give me the 1 minute version of this game of
a guy
dunking or something like that. So there we go.
Did you see too? Will Fries, the former Penn State offensive lineman, signed a 5-year deal worth $88 million dollars with the Minnesota Vikings.
Cash in, baby.
That was reported yesterday. Wow. Good on you, Will Fries.
Can I have some fries with that?
Man, I am telling you. Yes, indeed. Our buddy, my pal. Come on, Will.
Your pal.
I'll always love that Will Fries.
He's your pal.
Consider
now.
Us.
Is that right?
Yeah, best friends, really.
Oh, boy. Okay. A couple of the quick notes.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about COVID in the last segment. What have we learned from 5 years? New York Times had a story a couple of days ago. One of the things was the fact about home field advantage. All right. Do you remember 2020? And I'm thinking especially the fall of 2020 when they tried to play college football and they did it in empty stadiums. Do you remember that? It was absolutely surreal. Watching these games being played in empty stadiums. Now, folks, do you remember Penn State? Remember the 2020 season? Remember how it started once they finally got it rolling? Remember at the beginning there was going to be no Big Ten football. Then when other leagues started playing, the Big Ten's like, oh, I guess we should play too. All right, that was totally fumbled. Huh, there's a pun. Totally fumbled. You remember how Penn State started in 2020, Mr. Ironhead? You remember how they started?
Like a ball of fire, except for the, you know,
five losses.
More like it was burning up.
They started 0-5.
It was a little rough.
And we're all sitting around like, what is this? What is going on?
It's pandemic.
How can this team be 0-5? It was because my thought 5 years ago, and I think it's now confirmed. You know, when you play in front of a stadium full of people, you feed off of that. And of course, Beaver Stadium is a very special place because there's over 105,000 people that come to a football game. And just about all of them are Penn State fans. What do you do when there's nobody sitting there? This team needs the crowd. And that was definitively proven 5 years ago. This is a team that needs the crowd. Now, they rebounded and won their last, what was it, four games of that truncated season. But there's something we learned from COVID. You know, we talk about home field advantage, home court advantage. It's not about the field and it's not about the court. It's about the people. All right? Now, could we argue that the Penn State men's basketball team could have had a better season if more fans would have showed up at the Jordan Center? All right, I went. And you see it on TV, you got all these people disguised as empty seats. They're all over the place. Now, come up, Mr. Wrestling, all right, go to a wrestling match at Rec Hall or the Jordan Center. Every seat is full, isn't it? Every seat is taken.
Yep,
and
pretty much.
Those guys, they feed off that. We all do. Whereas if the place is empty, it's like, eh. Ice hockey. All right, Penn State hockey, the men I'm talking about especially, the place is sold out. And when Penn State scores, I mean, it's like, boom, everybody goes wild, and it's crazy. Athletes love that stuff. And so that's something we learned from COVID. It's not home field. It's not home court. It's the home people that gives an advantage to a home team. Learned that from COVID, like just plain as day.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break here.
All right, let's do it.
We'll have some open line time. Again, coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to talk with Dr. Kyle Kopko, who is the director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. How are we doing here in our neck of the woods as opposed to Philadelphia and Pittsburgh all the time? Are things getting better? Things getting worse? What are plans for the future? What can we look forward to? All that stuff. Some good stuff.
Our hockey teams are doing better.
I'm not sure if the Center for Rural PA has anything to do with that.
No, they're not looking at that.
I don't think they are.
I thought that was one of the...
Let's take a break, please. We'll come back.
Would you like to profit from Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox? If you have sales experience, we're looking for new team members to spread the word to local businesses about 98.7 The Fox. Sell advertising with a lot of potential from all of our Fox programs, Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, and live sports events focused right here in Center County. For more information, contact manager Sam Jordan via email at foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. That's foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. Join us here at 98.7 The Fox.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time. Even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Daughter Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
Your home for local sports. We are Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This spring we'll have live coverage of Center County baseball and softball with the long, strong traditions of great players and great teams in our area. You can follow this season from opening day through the state championship. All right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. We wish all of the local athletes the best of luck in the upcoming season. Stay tuned for more local sports right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
It is Let's Talk here on a Wednesday. We are right smack dab in the middle of the week, and we have some open phone time here at 814-954-7266. So just a couple of things to follow up on the naming of the field at Beaver Stadium, and more so the focus this morning on Joe Paterno, honoring Joe Paterno, and I am wondering if a couple of things are going on. One is, I don't know how many caught this. I caught it, and then we kind of focused on the naming part yesterday. But I am genuinely wondering where the idea came from. If you missed it, the idea was, yes, we have come up with the idea of how we will honor Joe Paterno, and in the Sports Museum, we are going to have a replica of Joe Paterno's office. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Joe Paterno.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, this was their plan.
Who's they?
Penn State.
Oh, okay. All right.
They came out and, no, we are honoring Joe Paterno. We are going to put a replica of Joe Paterno's office in the museum.
Okay.
And
I
am just struggling to imagine. I mean, somebody sat around in a meeting somewhere at Penn State and said, wait a second, guys, I got it. All right, we're not going to name the field after him, but what about this? And somebody else said, by God, we've got it. Yep. Well done.
Were you ever in his office?
And they had to call Sue Paterno, and I really would have loved to have been on that call. I at least just had a camera zooming in on Sue's face. Sue, this is Penn State. Hey. We agree. We finally come up with the way to, we've got to honor your husband. Here's what we're going to do. And Sue had to be like,
are you kidding?
Okay, this is not a great prank. Whoever this is, I mean, that this isn't even that funny. Like, what in the hell? Guys, have you ever heard of anybody anywhere? And maybe, again, I'm not all that worldly. Have you ever heard of anybody anywhere, you know, a bunch of ways we could honor an individual. Right, what do you think about building a statue? No, let's not build a statue. Hey, we could name the field. No, not naming the field. Well, maybe we could just have a big plaque and big honor, and then have a day for no. Hey, wait a second. What if we take an office that nobody really remembers? Very few people have been in. Not at all what the individual is known for. What if we take that office and replicate it and put it in a place where some folks will walk in from time to time and see it? Like,
You're being
What in the world?
You're being serious. I have not seen any of this.
Oh, see, yeah, you need serious? To pay.
Okay, I got to check this out.
Yes.
Anyway.
So that is one thing.
Were you,
like,
hold on. Were you ever in his office? I can say I was.
Yes.
I was in his office once.
Yes.
God forbid, it was 1985. I had just arrived, graduated from college, didn't go to school here. I'm 22 years old. I come in August, which is a terrible time to come because football is ramping up.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay, I'm an ambitious young reporter.
Oh, boy.
I want to get an interview with Coach Paterno. And they actually said, sure, come on in. And I went into Joe's office. I'm 22 years old. I'm scared to death. All right? Here's Joe Paterno sitting right in front of me. And Joe and I just sort of did a back and forth. And he was kind and gave me interesting answers. He probably thought, okay, this is some snot-nosed kid. All right, he's the new guy. I'll give him an interview. What the heck? And that was it. And I, you know, of course, I was in awe and like, oh my gosh. So I can say I was in his office. So if they actually, are they going to do this? Is this going to happen?
Or I don't think
this
so.
This is a maybe. Okay.
I think Sue put the kibosh on it.
If they would actually do it, I'd go over and see it. Like, well, that's not.
I would not.
Not
that
quite what I remember.
Not
now, granted,
at all.
1985 and 2010 or something, there's 25 years in between those two. But, now I think they can, I think they could come up with better ideas.
And then if you missed it, Brandon Short put out a statement on the Beaver Stadium field naming. I'm going to read through the entire statement.
It's a pretty long statement.
It is.
All right.
I'm a proud product of the grand experiment, and I love Joe Paterno. No matter where you stand on this issue, there are a lot of alumni who believe Joe was mistreated and view naming the field after Joe as a way to make things right. I believe Penn State has a bright future, and that the future is much more important than the past. However, I don't believe Penn State can reach its full potential by telling all those alumni to simply move forward. As a result, while I truly appreciate the generous contribution and partnership with the university, I will vote no to naming the field. There are other ways the university could honor Joe. I'll continue to work with the board to build consensus on ways to get it done. I believe that the majority of the board recognizes Joe's contributions to Penn State and is open to honoring him. That said, one of the main reasons the board has not been able to build consensus is the disruptive and inappropriate behavior of a group of trustees who claim they want to honor Joe. Yes, we could honor Joe if we just get rid of these trustees who are demanding that we honor Joe.
Wait, that's not in there.
The blame for not getting this done falls on them. This is actually what he wrote. These trustees have actively worked to undermine the current football program by actually demanding accountability. Oh, that's not actually in there. And the broader university. They've staged publicity stunts focused on drawing attention to themselves, which have derailed negotiations to honor Joe. Uh-huh. They've tried to hurt the current football program by spreading misinformation. Yeah, some of them were actually out there saying, there's a proposal for a $700 million renovation project to Beaver. Oh, wait, no, that was actually true. and attempting to block any financial support to the program. Any financial support to the program is what he writes. Okay. They have leaked selected information to the press and told half-truths in interviews in an effort to undermine Penn State leadership, kind of like what you're doing right here, Brandon, and paint leadership in a bad light. They filed costly, self-serving lawsuits against Penn State where they are demanding that as folks who are going to be handling the fiscal responsibility of the university, they have the information on, you know, the fiscal state of the university. That was not in there either. They have, again, filed these lawsuits, which have been a drain on time and resources that could be allocated to other challenges facing the university. Or you could just hand over the information to the trustees who have the fiduciary responsibility, and that also would have prevented the lawsuits. I ask, how could the board majority build consensus around honoring Joe with a group of trustees who've taken such a hostile stance against Penn State? The answer is, They can't. You can't possibly build consensus to honor Joe with this group of trustees who are hell-bent on honoring Joe.
Something backwards there.
What? That you can't. Which is why these trustees are to blame for Penn State not having Paterno Field.
Wait a minute.
You try to follow along here, kids. I'll continue to work with my colleagues on the board to find other ways to honor Joe. But unless those trustees change their disruptive and inappropriate behavior, unfortunately, we will most likely see the same results that we're seeing today. So to those trustees, for the sake of honoring Joe and for the future of this university, stop undermining Penn State.
He voted against on Monday.
Yes, he did.
Against the naming deal.
Yep.
And then he issues this.
Yes.
Okay, something's backwards.
It's going to sound like I'm being a smart aleck, and I understand I'm often a smart aleck. Genuinely, like, CTE is a real thing. And I do wonder, I mean, this makes no sense. If you read through this, like, it is... It makes no sense. Right, it's just a jumbled bunch of
rumors. I don't know about CTE, but he voted against on Monday, and then he issues this statement.
And he voted against naming the field Paterno Field when he voted to table the discussion. But this is, how could we possibly build a consensus to honor Joe with these folks on the board that are openly calling for the honoring of Joe Paterno.
There's something seriously backwards there.
If you're thinking to yourself, self, that doesn't really make any sense, you're correct.
Yeah, that's...
Well done. Way to be paying attention.
That's weird.
Very weird.
Again, $50 million, take the money. All right? But the athletic department needs to come out soon and definitively say, yes, we're going to honor Joe and Sue.
And not an office replication.
That
folks.
Sounds like a sitcom or something.
God.
All right, we'll take a break.
Would you like to profit from Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox? If you have sales experience, we're looking for new team members to spread the word to local businesses about 98.7 The Fox. Sell advertising with a lot of potential from all of our Fox programs, Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, and live sports events focused right here in Center County. For more information, contact manager Sam Jordan via email at foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. That's foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. Join us here at 98.7 The Fox.
When winter's at its worst, snowplow professionals need the best. That's why your local Boss dealer has the ultimate lineup of snow and ice solutions you need. Front to back, Boss leads with advanced truck plows and spreaders, compact equipment, heavy equipment, and time-saving tools to clear any surface area. Keep them open with a Boss snowplow. Built to back you up.
Maxwell Truck and Equipment, 1705 East Trout Road, State College. Call them at 814-234-2672.
The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycles.org for employment opportunities, upcoming events, the authority's newsletter, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
Your home for local sports. We are Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This spring we'll have live coverage of Center County baseball and softball. With the long, strong traditions of great players and great teams in our area, you can follow this season from opening day through the state championship. All right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. We wish all of the local athletes the best of luck in the upcoming season. Stay tuned for more local sports right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. We'll be right back.
Like Cummings Supply Incorporated, located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, is looking to hire numerous carpenters, laborers, and operators starting immediately for the construction season. Like Cummings Supply is a reputable contractor that has been in business since 1948 and is family-owned. Like Cummings Supply specializes in building bridges, box culverts, and also performs demolition work throughout the mid-state region. Having a CDL is preferred but not necessary. Stop by their office located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport and fill out an application and have two forms of ID ready. Lycoming Supply is an EEO employer. You may mail a resume or visit their office at Lycoming Supply, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. for more information. Lycoming Supply Incorporated, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 today.
Your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
A Wednesday morning we have in play. Let's Talk is the program. Jeff and Scott with you. We will have a little open phone time coming up at the end of this morning's big show.
Gee, nothing to talk about.
Huh, not a doggone thing.
How about the exact opposite, right? There's tons and tons to talk about.
Yeah, a couple things.
All right, here we sit again in rural PA. Yes, rural PA, you State College folks. All right, this is not Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. In my old job.
Although downtown is doing its best to replicate.
No, but rural PA. Come on, every now and then a deer gets loose downtown. You ever see those stories like, what's a deer doing here? Yeah, because we live in rural PA. So we want to welcome back to our program Dr. Kyle Kopko from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Dr. Kopko, first off, good morning, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. Now, again, all right, for long-time listeners, we had you on the show, I didn't even look, it's like over a year ago, because we wanted to know more about the center and about rural PA and things that are happening, things that are not happening, and so on and so forth. So let's start from scratch, if we could. Dr. Kopko, tell us about yourself, like what's your background and so on, and then tell us about the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. What is your organization? So first off, tell us about you.
Sure. I'm one of those overeducated people. Let's start there. So I was in higher ed for a decade before I went over to the General Assembly. Did a lot of data analysis, market research, things like that before joining the General Assembly. And the reason why I was approached about this job is because I had a background in political science, data analysis. I understood policy and politics within Pennsylvania. And the Center for Rural Pennsylvania essentially is a think tank that serves both the House and the Senate in a bipartisan manner. So any member of the House or the Senate could call us up asking for information so that way they can help craft legislation. But in practical terms, you know, it's really county commissioners, township supervisors, nonprofit groups, business leaders all throughout rural Pennsylvania that utilize our services the most. Anything and everything. We can put together demographic trends. We can put together economic analyses, economic impact analyses, all those fun things that are useful in the decision-making process. And by our definition of rural, 48 of Pennsylvania's counties are considered rural. So 67 counties in total for the Commonwealth, 48 of them are rural. About 75% of our land mass, about 26% of the population. And some of the listeners who heard me on the show before would probably remember me saying this, but I always like to emphasize how important rural is. If you were to take the population of rural Pennsylvania and make it its own state, it would have a population greater than 21 states and the District of Columbia. So that's how large of a territory, that's how sizable of a population that we're dealing with. And we are the only office in the Commonwealth that's solely devoted to rural issues.
Actually, it's kind of interesting, Doctor. I caught something online the other day from some information source or something. Of the 50 states, Pennsylvania is number 5 in population. Folks, did you know that? We're number 5 in total population. And so, Doctor, when you just, you know, toss those numbers out there that, you know, rural PA is bigger than almost half the other states out there, I guess I'm not surprised. Now, there's an obvious question. Define rural. What does rural mean? What does that mean?
So we take a very easy approach to this. It's population density. So if you're below the average statewide density, 291 persons per square mile, you're considered a rural county, a rural school district, and for the most part, a rural municipality. There's a few other steps in there for that measure. But that's how we get our 48 counties. So it's just a binary definition. You're either rural or you're urban. We don't break it down further to like suburban or anything like that. We keep it nice and easy.
Okay. When I think about some of those counties that surround Philadelphia, I don't think urban. I don't think rural. There isn't a third. I would think there should be a third category. But no, you don't see that. You don't agree with that.
You know, if we were, you know, pressed to describe this a bit more, it's probably rural versus everything else. So the urban and suburban probably get lumped together. That's probably the best way of conceptualizing it, because a lot of those collar counties, you know, they're a heck of a lot more developed than, say, you know, any of our northern tier counties, for example.
All right. Now, we had you over a year ago, and I didn't go back and, you know, check notes or, you know, any of that stuff. Since we had you on before, just sort of an open-ended general question, as far as rural PA is concerned, have things gotten better? And I'm not even sure what the definition of better is. All right? Have things gotten better? Have they gotten worse? What's the state of rural PA right now?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, to be perfectly honest. So we've seen more people coming into rural, moving in consistently over the past few years than moving out. So that's a good thing. Like, if people are voting with their feet, they're choosing rural communities. And, you know, you can understand why. We have a great quality of life. We have charming towns, good people, outdoor recreation, you know, all the things that we find very appealing about rural. At the same time, you know, we're facing a crisis whenever it comes to our hospital systems and healthcare systems in rural. I'm sure a number of listeners heard about UPMC coal shuttering labor and delivery services. So we certainly have those types of pressing issues that we're trying to grapple with, not just within our office here, but the entire General Assembly is trying to figure out a best pathway forward. So that's the best way I can answer it. It's both good and bad. It's really the issue that determines whether it's a good or bad outcome.
Now, a quick note for folks who aren't familiar. Cole Hospital, which is now part of UPMC, is in Countersport, which is in Potter Township. In my old job, Doctor, I drove past Cole, Route 6, a whole bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and yeah, when they announced, no, we're not doing baby deliveries anymore, you're like, whoa. I mean, the hospital is not closing, but they no longer have a maternity ward there, which I guess means people have to drive to Wellsboro if you're pregnant to give birth to your child. But, I mean, are you familiar with that situation?
Yes, yes, very much so. We actually had a legislative hearing a week ago from Friday, and one of our testifiers brought up that very issue. There are a number of counties now in the northern tier into western Pennsylvania where, you know, you have to drive maybe more than an hour if you want to have a baby. And what does that mean for young families who want to move into an area? It's going to be very difficult to attract and retain young families in that situation. So we're, the entire General Assembly, they are trying to figure out what are the, you know, regulatory things that could be eased, any other policies that could help. Could we, you know, maybe borrow some ideas from surrounding states to help with this issue? It's a tough one, to be perfectly honest.
All right, now a follow-up question, Doctor. You just said a couple minutes ago that in rural PA, more people are moving in than moving out. That sounds great. Where Exactly. Because, Doctor, this is Scott. With my old job, mm-hmm. I covered central and northern PA. I drove all over the place for my work. And even now, I see numbers continuing to go down. So if numbers are going up, where exactly? Is this the New Jersey border? I mean, where exactly is this taking place?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it is a lot around the Poconos. So that would be the New York, New Jersey border. We've seen an influx of individuals in that area, you know, Pike County, Wayne County, places like that. We've even seen some tremendous growth in places outside of Pittsburgh, like Butler County, too. So it's really a mixed bag. Adams County is growing as well. So basically, if you're near the state line, you're more likely to see an influx of individuals coming in from other areas, normally within a 100-mile radius of Pennsylvania, moving into those locations. If you're in the interior of the state, it's been more declines, unfortunately. It's just that we've had a stronger influx in some of those border counties that I just mentioned, and that, on average, is raising everything. So that brings up another, you know, interesting issue. You know, we have this tremendous regional variation all throughout the Commonwealth. So not all areas are experiencing the same growth patterns. And what does that mean for long-term planning? Because we want to make sure one of our chief goals is ensuring that rural communities across all of the Commonwealth can retain their vitality.
You touched on, obviously, the health care concerns. Is getting services, adequate services, to these rural communities, is that kind of the biggest issue that is being addressed? Not just health care, but just other services, just because, again, of the numbers, and in some cases the right. distance that you're needing to go. I know we've talked quite a bit over the years about the for a while we were talking about cell phone service, and there's still right. some areas that I don't know if people understand how significant that issue is still in some areas. And then obviously the internet capability in this day and age, those are kind of important ingredients, and we're still not, I would argue, not where we need to be in terms of providing those, just to name two of the services that I think we
right.
Need to provide for the rural areas.
You're absolutely right. We definitely aren't where we need to be. Cell phone access is still a big barrier. I mean, heck, even if you drive Route 6, that's a U.S. route. You're going to experience some dead zones along the way. And we're still not as far along with broadband deployment as we could be. And even if it is deployed, there's still a number of rural residents that, they don't have the financial means to buy it. So there are a number of issues that are out there, healthcare being one of them. I think, you know, generally speaking, the way government is designed, you know, there tends to be these, you know, very specific programs or solutions, but whenever it comes to rural, we really need to think about a holistic approach. You know, it's really about having vibrant communities, a vibrant economy in an area. If you just focus on one issue, you know, that might move the needle a little bit in the right direction, but that's not going to change everything. So it has to be this multifaceted, comprehensive approach to deal with all these issues at once. And that's why it gets to be so complicated. And then on top of it, you know, rural communities don't have the same economies of scale as you would see in other parts of the Commonwealth. And that often means that it's harder to develop, it's harder to maintain, and it's also harder to get the attention of folks who want to invest. So we have a few things working against us. And I don't mean to sound all doom and gloom, but I think that we also have some really positive attributes about our rural communities that make them such an attractive place. Again, if that weren't the case, you know, people wouldn't be coming to us. And that's really important to keep in mind. We have a lot of good things happening all throughout rural. We have close-knit communities. People can actually get stuff done on the ground and make a difference. You can't always do that same type of scaling up quickly in other parts of the Commonwealth.
Now, Doctor, our friends from Spotlight, Pennsylvania, we've had them on a number of times. They had a story just the other day, and you're quoted in the story. And it mentions the Rural Population Revitalization Commission. Ooh, that's a big, long title.
It sure is.
What exactly is that? I mean, we're talking about population. What is this commission?
Yeah, so whenever we released our population forecast about a year and a half ago, and we discussed that last time, you know, forecast showed more overall declines for rural and the Pennsylvania population overall just flatlining for the coming years. There's a number of legislators in the General Assembly, including members of our Board of Directors, that realize that this is a really big issue. And if we don't get our act together and if we don't start thinking about this in a thoughtful way, we're going to have some significant problems. We're going to continue to lose representation in Congress and less federal influence, all these things. So they came together in a bipartisan manner, created legislation that Governor Shapiro signed into law creating this new commission, the Pennsylvania Rural Population Revitalization Commission. And its job is to not just do research, it's really also to make recommendations in terms of new legislation, regulatory change, and even community best practices on how to address population loss and maybe in some circumstances reverse it, depending on if that's a strategy a community or a region wants to undertake. And I'm serving as the chairman of this commission. And it's not just a bunch of government types or anything like that. It's some state officials, some local officials. We have county commissioners. We have school board representation. And we also have private citizens. We have a couple members of chambers of commerce. We have the vice president of the Future Farmers of America for Pennsylvania on it as well. So it's some folks who have pretty diverse professional experience from all regions of the Commonwealth coming together to make recommendations on what to do. I referenced this hearing that we had a week ago on Friday. The whole theme of that hearing really was on local capacity issues. Now, I'm sure that you and your listeners are very familiar with this in rural. You know, our township supervisors, our county commissioners, and our smallest municipalities and smallest counties, they're wearing five or six hats at a time. You know, they're dealing with a lot. They may not have the staff to plan for, you know, 10 years out for economic development purposes. One thing that we heard loud and clear is that the state has some probably unnecessary barriers in place for funding and support for our rural communities. So I'll give you a quick example. Grant match requirements. So for a lot of municipalities, a lot of counties, a lot of nonprofits, if you want to get a state grant, you have to have some money up front to provide that match. And some programs require up to a 50% match. Well, if you're dealing with a township of a second class or, you know, an eighth, seventh, sixth class county, you know, they might not have the money in their coffers to fund that type of match. So they don't even try. And what ends up happening is that the municipalities and counties that are well off, they have professional grant writers on staff. They have larger budgets. They're able to compete more successfully for these funds. So it just leads to this perpetual uneven distribution of funds. And so we're going to make a recommendation, I think, at our next meeting that the Commonwealth really take a new approach to funding for our rural areas. So that's something that's on the horizon. We also made our first set of policy recommendations for the Commonwealth at this Friday meeting. We just actually sent a letter off to the governor's office and the row officers asking them to assess how they serve rural Pennsylvania. What are their successes in doing so? What have been their barriers and what could they do differently going ahead in the future? And to document that so that way we can have a Commonwealth that's more responsive to the needs, the distinctive needs of our rural communities. Now, it's nothing earth-shattering, but, you know, given that we have the third largest rural population in the country, I'll say that again, we have the third largest rural population in the country, we haven't really taken a statewide approach to thinking about how we serve rural areas. So hopefully we're getting other members of the Commonwealth to think in that manner, so that way our rural communities aren't disadvantaged, they're not overlooked, and we can begin to think about how we serve them as a Commonwealth.
We'll take a break here in just a minute. Doctor, one thing that's confused the heck out of me is grant writing. You just mentioned some counties, they've got professional grant writers, others, they don't have the funds for that. Shouldn't it just be based on need? You have to write a grant a certain way and then you win, whereas these folks don't have the chance to do it. That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand grant writing. Why don't we just give it to the folks who really need it?
Yeah, and maybe talk to the nonprofits.
Yeah.
We hear this all the time. It's really a fair point. I think at the end of the day, a lot of agencies want to do something and they have just a limited pot of funds. And so they view a competitive grant process as the most efficient way, just speaking based upon their best argument. It's probably the most efficient way of making good use of taxpayer dollars. And I get that argument. But I think that we all know that there are definitely rural communities and under-resourced communities where, you know, maybe a township only has a part-time employee as secretary and treasurer or something along those lines. You know, they're at a pretty strong disadvantage. Sometimes there's help from your local development districts in the Appalachian Regional Commission area. Sometimes counties can provide some level of support, but that's not something a lot of folks can count on because that varies from region to region. And that's one of our main concerns here. We got to do better in that regard.
All right, let's take a break right here. Our guest again is Dr. Kyle Kopko from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Yeah, doctor, you got a co-host here whose wife runs a nonprofit. Why are you holding your head? You have a headache or something? I mean, when I mentioned grant writing, groaned.
It's amazing.
You're familiar with that. Okay. All right, folks, we're going to take a break here. We have more questions about rural PA. That's where we live. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. We'll come back.
Get that feeling. Get that feeling. This is The Fox.
Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCormick has won it. They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him, and he's done it again. Paul Skeens finishes strong.
Every game, all season long, brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion!
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
The Center Hall Farm Store is proud to serve our community as a small family business that provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm Store makes its own horse, cow, pig, chicken, and bird feeds and has a great variety of pet feeds for your needs. Open weekdays from 8 to 4 and Saturday from 8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or on the web at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycles.org for employment opportunities, upcoming events, the authority's newsletter, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time. Even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Dodder Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
It is Let's Talk here on a Wednesday. Jeff and Scott with you again. We'll have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of this morning's program.
Again, another segment with our guest, Dr. Kyle Kopko with the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Now, Doctor, when I was prepping for the interview, went to your website. Let's mention the website, rural.pa.gov. rural.pa.gov. A lot of information there. Now, Doctor, I noticed one thing that was on the website. You folks did, listening sessions or something back in the fall into, I guess, January, so not that long ago. Now, maybe we echoed some of this stuff in the last segment, but you know, where did you go and what did you hear? Did anything, surprise you when you folks were doing these sessions?
Sure, and I'll just say, to lay the groundwork for the Population Commission, we wanted to make sure that we were hearing from stakeholders on the ground. We just didn't want to get together and, think, oh, I have an idea, let's pursue this. No, we wanted to really make sure that we heard from as many voices as possible. So we partnered with the local development districts all throughout the ARC region, the Appalachian Region Commission, and then also some of the electric co-ops for the rural counties that aren't part of the ARC region. And we basically asked the local development districts to invite county commissioners, economic development professionals, business owners, anyone that they thought could show up and have a discussion on what are some of the big issues facing their region. And there's a lot of common things that were raised, as you might imagine. Housing almost was the number one issue that folks brought up every time. Broadband access, healthcare access. Now, what was surprising, those issues are, probably familiar to a lot of folks. Not too surprising, but the underlying cause for those issues being a problem varied from region to region. So take housing, for example. Sometimes in a region, the biggest barrier was lack of sewer and water. You have that type of infrastructural barrier. Other times, it would be permitting. DEP lag times was brought up a fair amount. Sometimes, there wasn't a developer who was readily accessible in a given area. So, folks might have a common problem, but the reason why it's a problem was different from region to region. So I think that's really important for folks at the state level to keep in mind. And that's something we constantly have to remind folks of. Because Pennsylvania is so large in terms of its geography, our regions are very different. What's true in the Northeast may not be true in the Southwest. So as we're thinking about what's a good strategy going forward, you really need to engage with folks on the ground. You really have to talk to your county commissioners, your township supervisors, your business owners, your nonprofit groups to figure out what's going on in that region and craft strategy that way. Because, oftentimes these one-size-fits-all approaches, they're just not going to work in rural.
All right, I'm going to make my co-host chuckle here.
Oh,
just a general question, Doctor. Is there too much regulation out there? And a lot of this, if it would be cut, we'd be much better off. Now, you may disagree. I don't know what your answer is going to be. Is there too much state regulation, maybe even local regulation?
Like me, you think we need more red tape. Please, can we get some more regulations for more people to work through?
Okay, there
yeah,
he
we,
is.
No, we don't need more red tape. But one thing that we keep hearing about is we need more flexibility. I mean, you know, obviously not all regs are bad, but they might be formulated in a way that just doesn't make sense in rural. It might be burdensome, it might be onerous, and we need to look at those. I'm painting with a very broad brushstroke here because there's so many different types of regulations that are out there. And we're also structured in a way where, you know, there's regulations at the local level, the county level, and the state level. So, you know, even in terms of, like, bringing in, you know, housing development or new employers, you know, I was having a conversation with someone in the business industry just yesterday. Question came up, hey, if someone wants to come in and invest tens of millions of dollars and wants to create a new business in Pennsylvania, what should be their first point of contact? And it's a good question because there's really no right answer to that. You know, we're a very decentralized state by design. And I think that that's it makes our jobs for rural development and rural policymaking that much more complex.
Okay. See, I knew you would react to that one. My friend Jeff is not a regulation red tape fan. Oh, my God. So why? Okay. Is this a Harrisburg thing? Why don't they just do it? I mean, what are the reasons for keeping red tape? That's what people out here, we don't understand. Like, get rid of this crap in front of us so that we can do stuff. Why do they hold on to it?
You know, I don't think that it's people in Harrisburg necessarily being, you know, nefarious or anything like that. I think that there's generally not an awareness of how things work in rural communities. I think it's that simple. You know, I've heard from rural stakeholders a number of times, like, how difficult it is to get folks from other parts of the state to go north of I-80 for a meeting. You know, we are so regional in our identities, even within Pennsylvania. And I think that a lot of folks just tend to think that the rest of the state is the same as what it might be in South Central Pennsylvania. And we know that's obviously not the case.
Well, let's see. Lancaster County has Amish, and we have Amish, but that's about the only way we're the same. You know, trust me, we're not the same. Now, I mentioned that Spotlight Pennsylvania story, and the headline at least says, talking about boosting local governments. I mean, Doctor, how do I phrase this question? Is there a problem with local governments that they're just not getting things done, they don't have any money, that's where the main part of the issue is? How much of this is about local governments and what they're supposed to be doing?
You know, I approach this like building a house, right? You know, if you don't have a strong foundation, you're not going to get very far. And when we think about policy implementation or just planning for the future, this stuff happens at the local level. And I'm not saying that, you know, this is the fault of any municipalities in particular or anything like that. It's not their fault. We've structured things in a way where we tend to treat all municipalities the same, at least at the state level, without taking into account, you know, what's their geographic spread, what's their infrastructure like, what's their staffing like, what's their tax base like. You know, we're not advocating for, like, forced mergers or doing away with our current land use system or anything like that. But there are clearly differences in municipalities. Our township supervisors, our county commissioners are working their tails off to make things right. And they just don't have the bandwidth in many areas. And we're trying to get the state to at least, one, recognize that. And for those areas that might need, you know, some extra barriers out of the way, what would that look like? And so back to the grant matches, I know that's not going to, you know, solve everything, but again, our approach has to be, we got to make incremental changes here, for a variety of reasons. But if we were to just improve that process, say, hey, if you need help writing a grant, we can do that. If you need, you know, a waiver of a match requirement, we can do that. Recognizing that rural areas don't have all the same things as folks would in, say, the southeast part of the state or the south central part of the state.
Yeah, the other thing, are you seeing more I guess, creative approaches, maybe above and beyond the grants where, hey, maybe let's get some companies that do a lot of business in rural areas, and, hey, can we create a John Deere program here to help supplement X, again, whatever a given need in a community is? Or can we merge a couple of communities together and go after, you know, monies for services where maybe we could combine some things, where maybe we do have some similar needs, at least in a couple of particular areas? Because it does feel like one of the things that I'm guessing here is, again, from a political standpoint, it's like, well, there's a handful of people there. Even if I don't get their votes, what do I care statewide?
Right.
And, you know, again, from a business standpoint, if businesses aren't directly in those communities, there might be not a lot of interest. But those people obviously are important to the overall makeup of the state and, you know, for different business services, they're important customers for them.
Yeah, there's a lot packed into that question, and I think you're definitely on to something here. So, you know, backing up, whenever we run into a lot of the same problems here that we do even just in competitive funding and grants. Like, it's expected that the locals come together, that they invest their time and efforts, but, you know, if they're already, you know, dealing with a number of immediate fires in front of them, you know, if they have road issues that they have to deal with, you know, getting all of them on the same page and saying, hey, on top of everything else that you're doing, let's come together and let's start on this business recruitment strategy. You know, in some areas that's going to be possible. In other areas, it's not, because they're strapped. They're overworked. And I think that, you know, the Commonwealth needs to, one, recognize that, and two, talk to folks in those areas and say, what do you guys need? If you want to pursue a strategy, what's going to be most helpful for you? And tell us. And don't assume that folks in Harrisburg can understand the intricacies of everything that happens on the ground level throughout all of Pennsylvania. I think that has to be our approach. And we're starting to, you know, get folks to recognize that.
All right. This is Scott. Let me jog my brain. That hurts. Let's go back 10 or 12 years. Energy production, natural gas was going to be the salvation for a lot of areas of rural Pennsylvania. Or at least that's, my recollection is that's how it was pitched. Oh, this is going to be, here we go. We got that Marcellus Shale and we're going to make big money and everything's going to boom and so on. And 10 or 12 years later, Doctor, I'm not seeing it. I mean, first of all, did I describe that accurately from a dozen or 10 years ago? And what has happened since then? Because it doesn't, to my...
And the gas tax was supposed to do that. And then the gaming taxes, that was supposed to do that.
Right.
Now marijuana sales. All of these things are going to solve all of these financial issues. And we never
And it
actually,
never seems to happen.
Right.
But let me stick with natural gas.
Right.
What happened?
We had a short-term boom, really, in a lot of areas. And I think that, you know, whenever you look at the work crews and the drilling sites and things like that, the folks who are coming in are generally there for a short period of time. They're not permanent residents. Yeah, they might be living out of hotels or short-term rentals or things like that. But once the job's done, you know, they're moving on to another location, which could even be outside of Pennsylvania. It just really depends. So we didn't see that same type of economic boom from, like, you would expect with, like, a new factory opening up or a new hospital opening or whatever it might be. So I think that was one pretty significant gap in understanding, like, what happened over time. And I still think that there is promise, as if we were to continue to build more power plants themselves. I mean, obviously, in that situation, you need to have a physical structure. You need to have employees on the ground. But we've been pretty slow on that type of development, too, even in recent years. We might be seeing some movement on that end here at the state level this year. Stay tuned. You'll have to wait and see.
All right. I mean, we've been waiting.
Again,
with my old job.
But no, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
It's a very fair point.
In my old job, sometimes I would go up to Towanda, which is in Bradford County. Mm-hmm. Have a number of friends in Towanda. And that's a big natural gas, or sort of, natural gas area. I remember they built a hotel on the edge of town. But in recent years, Doctor, when I've driven past that hotel, it's empty. There's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think all the guys are out walking, you know, working, and then they come back to the hotel at night. No, there's nobody at this hotel. I'm thinking, okay, mm-hmm. this has been a bust, not a boom.
Yeah. Yeah, and whenever I was on a drilling site last year, I guess it was, you know, a lot of folks even have the ability to, you know, spend the night there on site, so they wouldn't necessarily be in town. And I'm not sure that, you know, a dozen years ago, folks were thinking in that way. So it was just something that didn't materialize.
Now, Doctor, all right, you mentioned your group, Center for Rural Pennsylvania, think tank and so on, and you have plans, I'm sure, and all this stuff. Is there some, like, ultimate, this is where we want rural Pennsylvania to be? Here's what, when we get to this point, we've made it, or something. Is there some future utopian something vision that says, here's our goal, this is what we want to go to? Is there such a thing?
Sure, utopia is the goal. There you go. But no, honestly, you know, what we're seeing in rural Pennsylvania has been decades in the making. And it's not ever going to be an overnight fix. What we're really focused on is we know what the status quo is going to lead to. We have pretty good data on that. We want to try to at least mitigate as much as possible. And, you know, I'm coming at this with clear eyes. We don't have a bunch of money, and oftentimes even having a bunch of money doesn't solve the issue. There's a lot of things that just need to happen throughout new government processes to make them more responsive to the distinct nature of our rural communities, and making sure that rural communities have a meaningful feedback mechanism so that way they're not left behind. If we can get those kinds of things in place, it'll move the needle in the right direction. Is it going to solve everything? Nope. No, because we're talking about macroeconomic issues that go well beyond Pennsylvania. So if you even look at, you know, parts of Western New York, Eastern Ohio, West Virginia, you know, down into Kentucky and Tennessee, parts of Western Virginia too. I mean, this is really a regional phenomenon that we find ourselves in. So if we can at least stem the bleeding, first of all, and maybe even get us to a point where, you know, our population was what it was maybe 10, 20 years ago. We're not talking about massive shifts here, but if we can stabilize things and make sure that we have that solid economic base for rural communities and maintain that, that's going to be better than where we're heading based upon the data. So that's I'd say, our most immediate goal. You know, we're giving it our very best shot to make that work.
In that regard, how much is maybe some of the technological advances on the agriculture front? I mean, I guess everywhere, but in particular for rural areas in the agriculture. Because one of the things, at least that we're seeing and hearing around here, is like these generational farming families are no longer a generation. The next generation is like,
right.
Nope. I see
right.
how hard you're working. I see what you're getting profitability wise, and I'm out. And I mean, that's a big part of the equation here, right?
It is a big part for the future of agriculture. You're right, and we've heard this a number of times. This isn't just affecting agriculture, but to case in point, ag workforce is aging rapidly. There are folks that want to transition their farms to the next generation, but the next generation may not want to do that. And there are some folks that want to get involved in farming and in agriculture, but they might not have the capital to do it. I mean, if you have a pretty large farm, that takes a significant amount of money to make that purchase, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, if we do have... We are already at the point where there are some smart tractors and things like that. Some veterinarians are already using augmented reality and microchips in animals and things like that. Like, that's here and now. One of the biggest barriers, though, is having a mesh wireless network connected to a fiber line and good broadband internet to allow those technologies to be deployed. And then even if you do have that in place, does the farmer have the financial means to implement that? Now, if you were to ask our friends in the Department of Agriculture, what are you doing to help with this? They would point to a new fund that the General Assembly approved last year, and it's still up for debate for renewal in this next budget cycle for Agricultural Innovation Fund. No other state in the country, to our knowledge, has something like this, and it's meant to help our ag producers implement those new technologies on their farm operations so they can be more efficient. And hopefully, then, that eases some of the workforce strains for our ag sector. I can tell you the folks in PDA, the Department of Agriculture, they get it. They're good people over there. I talk to them on a regular basis, and they are really concerned about the future of agriculture because, you know, it's arguably our most important industry in the Commonwealth.
All right, last question here. The last 2 months in Washington, D.C. have been interesting. He says with tongue.
Really? Has something been happening?
Yeah.
I'll be
He
gone.
Says with tongue firmly in cheek. Does any of that affect what you do, Doctor? Or, you know, how much does that affect rural PA? All the, seemingly every day, something new is tossed out
right
down there, you know? And I guess that's going to continue. Does that, anything from D.C. affect your work or what you folks are trying to do?
It indirectly affects us. I mean, since we're a state agency, you know, we're tied to the state budget and the Harrisburg government as opposed to Washington, D.C. But, you know, we have heard some issues about farmers not receiving USDA loan or grant payments, things of that nature, just in the holdup and the funding freeze. You know, it's been more anecdotal than anything. Obviously, if there's a major federal employer that closes up shop in a rural community, yeah, that's going to affect the local economy. So we haven't heard a lot of concrete details yet on how this is going to affect all of rural Pennsylvania because it's still playing out. It's a potential concern, but so far we're still gathering information.
Well, Donald Trump apparently got a free Tesla yesterday, so I'm going to wait for my free Tesla so that I can drive around rural PA.
Perfect.
Dr. Kopko, we really appreciate your time this morning.
Yes, thank you.
Again, the website is rural.pa.gov. A lot of information there. And maybe I need to go into grant writing because apparently we need more grant writers or something.
Yeah.
Doctor, thank you again for your time this morning.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, some good information there. Check the website.
Really good,
some good information on the website there. We're going to take a break. Final segment when we come back.
Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCormick has won it! They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him, and he's done it again. Paul Skeens finishes strong.
Every game, all season long, brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion.
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
The Jolly Roger!
Your home for local sports. We are Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This spring we'll have live coverage of Center County baseball and softball. With the long, strong traditions of great players and great teams in our area, you can follow this season from opening day through the state championship. All right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. We wish all of the local athletes the best of luck in the upcoming seasons. Stay tuned for more local sports right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Oh.
When winter is at its worst, snowplow professionals need the best. That's why your local Boss dealer has the ultimate lineup of snow and ice solutions you need. Front to back, Boss leads with advanced truck plows and spreaders, compact equipment, heavy equipment, and time-saving tools to clear any surface area. Keep them open with a Boss snowplow, built to back you up.
Maxwell Truck and Equipment, 1705 East Trout Road, State College. Call them at 814-234-2672.
Lycoming Supply Incorporated, located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, is looking to hire numerous carpenters, laborers, and operators starting immediately for the construction season. Lycoming Supply is a reputable contractor that has been in business since 1948 and is family-owned. Lycoming Supply specializes in building bridges, box culverts, and also performs demolition work throughout the mid-state region. Having a CDL is preferred but not necessary. Stop by their office located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport and fill out an application and have two forms of ID ready. Lycoming Supply is an EEO employer. You may mail a resume or visit their office at Lycoming Supply, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. for more information. Lycoming Supply Incorporated, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 today.
Would you like to profit from Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox? If you have sales experience, we're looking for new team members to spread the word to local businesses about 98.7 The Fox. Sell advertising with a lot of potential from all of our Fox programs, Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, and live sports events focused right here in Center County. For more information, contact manager Sam Jordan via email at foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. That's foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. Join us here at 98.7 The Fox.
Let's talk here on a Wednesday. Jeff and Scott, phone line is open, 814-954-7266. If you want to weigh in on, well, just about any doggone thing you'd like.
This works.
Good morning. You're live on Let's Talk.
Hey, good morning. It's a great conversation with the doctor.
Thank you.
Hey, I would say one thing at Pennsylvania... Well, Pennsylvania and farming have over some other places is a diversity in crops. So you, within your same county, you could have fruit production, meat production, milk production, hays, grains. That kind of stabilizes things a little bit. So if you compare out Kansas, they're kind of a couple crop country. And when they go to economies of scale, and trying to compete in the global marketplace, and they gear up, and they have all the latest and greatest equipment, and fewer people are employed. And then when they do need maintenance on their equipment, they circumvent the local mechanic, and whole towns have dried up. And you can buy ghost towns in places like Kansas. So when we talk about having a rural population that's level, compared to some other places, that's not so bad. It's not declining. Now, this all this broadband talk, I'm not convinced that drones and automated tractors, now, we've had what they call auto-steer tractors for over 20 years. But then there's an insurance policy. They still want somebody in the cab like the Tesla. So I don't see how that saves you labor costs. What I do see with the broadband is the guy who's tired of taking the subway to Manhattan, the financier kid who's tired of taking that journey on the subway, might look at the low crime and a fairly hospitable place in rural PA as a place to do his financial work out of. But he needs broadband. So I'm not quite convinced this is all about ag, this broadband business.
Well, I'll tell you
now,
what.
The other thing.
You just described extreme northeast Pennsylvania along the Jersey border. those counties are growing because folks are moving over from New York and New Jersey. You know?
Right.
They're beyond Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, not in the Jersey line. Those places are booming. And then, of course, well, the doctor mentioned this. The counties along the Maryland border are booming. York, Lancaster, Adams. I'm not sure about Franklin because folks are moving up from Maryland because they want to live here. Well, good for them.
Right. Yep.
It'd be interesting if they could keep going, you know.
Come more north, young folks.
Yeah, go north, young folks.
And then they buy that 1840 farmstead with the nice Federalist-style architecture, and they say, what's that? A well? What's that? A leach field? No, 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 no. I want public service. So, yeah, they keep your population up, but they put different demands on that just getting by government, world government.
Yeah.
So what was the other thing? I actually think I'm looking at Tesla and Elon Musk in Washington, and I don't think he's just doing it for nothing. But in some states, they're actually dealing with a lack of grant writers and the paucity of or few people involved in local government. And they're outsourcing it to global corporations who utilize AI to help you do all your paperwork as a local government and drive down your costs.
Yeah.
Now the return to the global corporate companies that are getting in on this, they gather the data and they use AI. And they become more and more and more competitive. And if you follow the story of AI, they say once there's a competitive advantage with AI technology, there's no catching up to it. So I guess I kind of like some of the inefficiencies of Pennsylvania government if it means I can still call Sally up when she gets a chance and ask her about the form rather than do it through the computer.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Appreciate your call.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Yep.
Yeah, AI is changing the game. Slowly. Actually, not so slowly when you think about it.
No.
It is. And as far as rural PA is concerned, and again, I'm thinking about my old job, keeping the young people here. A lot of those areas, like Northern Tier, east of the Susquehanna, here in the middle of the state, you know, the so-called coal regions and so on, they can't keep the kids. They don't have as many kids, you know, like in the past, and they can't keep the kids. The kids are like, out of here. I mean, I remember, you know, in the old work I used to do with schools, for years, I just for fun asked this question. I'd be in a class of students, and I would say, okay, how many of you have the opinion that when you graduate from here, I am gone, I'm not coming back? Raise your hand. And usually at least half the room would put their hand up. At least, sometimes more than half the room. Kids are not dumb. They want to go places where there are opportunities. And maybe in central and northern PA, this still today, it's just not there. I don't know if AI could help with that or not. I don't know, but it's where we live. We got to be watching out for this stuff. State College may be doing great guns. The donut, State College, and then the donut is everywhere around State College. The actual donut still not doing that great. Just isn't. Now, will that change? Well, we'll see what the doctor talked about there with our interview. You know, is this, and throwing money at the problem is not necessarily the answer. That's not it. It's just, I don't know, new opportunities, new technologies, new ideas, new stuff. That's what's going to revitalize rural PA. We keep doing the same thing we're doing, we're going to keep going down. Boom.
Yeah.
Boom-o. Talk to people in Huntington, Clearfield, Elk, Clinton. They'll tell you. Yeah, I'm seeing it right in front of me. Hey, friends, another mostly warm day. All right, get out and enjoy it. And we will see you here again tomorrow morning.